So today we're celebrating the most important event in the Buddha's life and celebrating therefore the most important festival in the whole of the Buddhist year. Now, since the Buddha's attainment of enlightenment was the most important event in his life, it's only natural that in the course of ages, quite a number of traditions should have clustered about that event. It's natural that a number of different teachings by the Buddha himself, should have come to be associated with that particular event. And this evening, on this particular occasion, I want to deal with just two of these traditions, two of these teachings. One of them, at least, I know, is already well known to at least some of you, and I suspect that the other may not be familiar, perhaps, to any of you. Now, both of these traditions, both of these teachings, are found in what is called the Samyukta Nikaya. Samyukta Nikaya is usually translated as the Book of the Kindred Sayings. That is to say, sayings on the same subject by the Buddha. And the Samyukta Nikaya is a book of the Pali canon. The first of these two traditions or sayings is also found elsewhere in the Pali canon. And interestingly enough, the second of these traditions or teachings follows in the Samyukta Nikaya immediately after the first. In this first tradition, or perhaps we can see this first episode, the Buddha has just attained supreme enlightenment. It's the time immediately following upon that attainment. And he's staying, according to this particular text, he's staying at a place called Uruvela. And he's staying in a very pleasant spot. We're told he's staying on the banks of a river, staying on the banks of the river Niranjara. And he's reflecting. He's just attained enlightenment, and he's reflecting. And how is he reflecting? What is he reflecting? What train of thoughts, what train of ideas is passing through his mind? He's reflecting that the Dharma, which we translate as law or truth or reality, the Dharma that he has just realized, that he has just discovered, is very difficult to understand. Reflecting, he says to himself, this Dharma, this truth, this reality, which I've realized, is peaceful, sublime, not a matter of mere reasoning, not a matter of mere dialectic, and it's subtle. It's intelligible only to the wise, the truly wise. This is the way in which the Buddha reflects after the enlightenment. Not only that, he further reflects that people, ordinary people, the average man, the average woman, they're very attached. They're very attached in particular to the pleasures of the senses, pleasures coming through the eye, ear, nose, and so on. In fact, they delight in the pleasures of the senses. They're absorbed in them. They don't take anything else perhaps very seriously. And for such people, absorbed as they are in the pleasures of the senses and the lower mind, it'll be very difficult for them to understand the Dharma, the truth or reality that he has discovered. And therefore, he further reflects, it may well be a waste of time for him to teach, to try to teach the Dharma that he had discovered to them. This is the way in which the Buddha reflected. These are the trains of thought that occurred to him after the enlightenment. Well, some of you know the story. Some of you know the story very well, and you know that after the Buddha had reflected in that manner, someone appeared before him. And this was none other than the God, the great God, Brahma Sahampati, which means Brahma, the Lord of a thousand worlds. He appears before the Buddha, and he begs the Buddha very humbly to teach the Dharma that he has discovered. And he tells the Buddha that there are in the world at least a few people whose eyes are covered with just a very little of the dust of the passions, and they, he says, will surely listen to the Dharma if the Buddha proclaims it to them. And we're then told, the Samyukta Nikaya tells us, that the Buddha thereupon surveys the whole world with what is called his Buddha eye, his transcendental vision. And he sees that beings, the beings of the world, are in different stages of development. He sees, as we saw this afternoon, he sees that they're just like lotus plants. Some plants are sunk below the surface of the water. Some have risen to the surface itself. And some stand above the water, absolutely unwetted by it. So the Buddha sees humanity, sees the whole human race as being in these different stages of development. And so seeing, he agrees, out of compassion, to teach the Dharma. And he addresses Brahma Sahampati in verse. The verses are very beautiful in Pali, very rhythmical, but I can only read you an English translation. The Buddha says, "Open for them is the door to the deathless state. Let those that hear release their faith." The commentators interpret this expression, release their faith, in two different ways. There are two different ways of looking at it. Release their faith can mean let them let go of their wrong faith. And it can also mean let them free up their right faith. Let them give up their faith in teachings which do not lead to enlightenment, and let them release their faith with regard to teachings that do lead to enlightenment. Not long afterwards, the wheel of the Dharma starts rolling. The Buddha starts teaching. Now, this particular tradition, or this particular episode, is important for quite a number of different reasons, but I'm not going into all of them this evening. I want to draw attention to just one point. The Buddha has attained enlightenment. In his own words, he has penetrated the Dharma. He has penetrated something which is hard to understand. So having penetrated the Dharma, having understood the Dharma, how or in what way does he characterize this Dharma? How does he describe this Dharma? Well, he describes it as consisting in the fact that, to quote again, this is conditioned by that. That all that happens is by way of a cause. In other words, the Buddha describes the Dharma in terms of what came to be known as praticca-sammuppāda, or dependent origination, also known as conditioned co-production in English. The Dharma is praticca-sammuppāda. Praticca-sammuppāda is the Dharma. Now, for most of you, this will be very familiar ground, because perhaps we can't go over this very familiar ground too often. But since it is very familiar ground, I don't have on this occasion to go into it very much, certainly not in detail. I just want to remind you of one thing, and then we'll pass on to our second tradition, or second episode. Potitia samutpada, or conditioned co-production, is of two kinds. One is symbolized by the wheel, and the other by the spiral. One represents, or is represented by, rather, the round of birth and death and rebirth, and the other is represented by the successive stages of the spiritual path, especially by the successive stages of what we may call the transcendental path. One is represented by what we've come to call the reactive mind, and the other by what we've come to call the creative mind. One consists in a process of action and reaction between factors which are opposites, while the other consists in a process of accumulation, we may say, between factors, the succeeding one of which augments the effect of the preceding one. Now, the fact that the second kind of paticca samuppada, the second kind of dependent origination or conditioned co-production, is of this kind has a number of quite important consequences, and we shall have occasion to deal with one of them just a little later on.